If you've been with us from the start of this series on the life of Joseph and his brothers, you might remember the title that's given to this section in the book of Genesis. In chapter 37, verse 2, we're told that these are the generations of Jacob. And we started the series by looking at what that meant. We saw the whole of Genesis, in fact the whole of the Bible, is about generations, about births, about God's great promise to rescue the world through a promised child. And we discover in the book of Genesis that child is going to be born in the family of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And we've been reading about those promises in the psalm that we read right at the beginning of this service. And as you read through Genesis and you read about those three men, you hear God speaking to them and making them great promises, wonderful promises. He promises that they'll become a great nation. He promises that he'll give them the land of Canaan to live in as their own possession. He promises that the whole world, that people from every nation, will be blessed through them and their descendants. But then we also went on to see that in Jacob's family, it became very difficult to see how those promises could ever come true. We saw that those promises were terribly threatened. They're threatened by famine, the fact that they're in danger of starving to death. They're threatened by favoritism and hatred and betrayal within the family. Above all, they're threatened by the wickedness of Jacob's sons. And yet, as we've gone on through the story, we've seen that through God's grace, those problems have been overcome. The situation's been transformed. And Jacob's sons have been changed, transformed in their character. And through that, and through Joseph, and the family is delivered from starvation and death. That those promises which seemed in such danger have been rescued. It looks like they can come true after all. That's been what we've seen up till now. But tonight, the story we'll see is starting to change its focus, again, back away from Joseph and his brothers, back to the man who the section is named after, back to their father, Jacob. And tonight our focus is going to be on Jacob. And remember, sometimes as we're reading through, he's called Jacob. At other times he's being called Israel, which was the new name that God gave to him. It's the same person. And in our reading, it was a long reading, wasn't it? But towards the end, we read the words that Jacob spoke when Joseph brought him in front of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And this is what Jacob said. He's looking back at his life. And Pharaoh has asked him how old he is. And he says this: "The days of the years of my sojournings are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the day of their sojourning." Jacob looks back over his life to this point. And how does he summarize it? He says, "My years have been few and evil." Now, do you find those words surprising? After all, this is Jacob. This is the great patriarch. He's the one who's inherited all of God's promises. He's the father of the sons who are going to become the nation. And he's just been reunited to his long lost son, to Joseph. And he's been filled with joy at being able to see his long lost son again. He's been delivered from death and from famine. We read about the tearful reunion, didn't we? Between Joseph and Jacob. And the tears and the joy. So you wonder, well, why isn't he a bit more positive when he's brought before Pharaoh? And maybe you're asking yourself, why does he say his years are few? 130 seems like a pretty good old age, doesn't it? And certainly to the Egyptians that would have seemed a good old age. One source suggests that the ideal age to live to in Egypt in that time was 110. So Jacob's significantly beyond that. And I think that's why Pharaoh is speaking to him with such... he's asking him how old he is, because he's impressed by the age he's reached. But Jacob says, my years have been few. Why does Jacob speak in this way? Well, let me just remind you, many of you know the story of Jacob, but let me remind you of his life and what's happened to him. Do you remember, he comes from a small family. There's just two brothers, Jacob and his twin brother Esau. Two boys very different from each other in character and interests. And that family from the beginning is divided. And the two parents each have a favourite son. And that leads to trouble within the family. And then there are things from outside which cause them problems. At points they have to live through famine. They have to live with trouble and argument with their neighbours. And then the family is shattered when Jacob deceives his father in order to gain the family blessing. That leads to his brother Esau planning to murder him. And Jacob is forced to flee miles away to escape his brother. Do you remember, he goes up north to his uncle Laban and settles down with him. But his uncle, his own relative, proves a deceptive liar. And he deceives him into marrying the daughter that Jacob didn't want to marry. Jacob marries the daughter he does love as well. But then his whole family, his whole life then, is marked by strife and rivalry and jealousy between his two wives and the maidservants that they give to Jacob as extra wives. In the meantime, Jacob himself is wearing himself out to the bone, caring for sheep. There's one point where he's talking to Laban and he's talking about how he's out in the heat and the cold, day and night, caring for the animals. And at the same time, his uncle keeps being deceptive. He keeps changing his wages, keeps trying to take back what he's promised from Jacob. In the end, Jacob and his family get so desperate they feel they have to flee away from Laban back to where Esau is living. And then Jacob faces the wrath of his brother Esau. God delivers him from that. God saves him from Esau. But then his life doesn't get any easier. His daughter Dinah, do you remember, is raped. And then his sons massacre not only the rapist, but everyone else who lives in the town where he comes from. And Jacob and his family have to flee again, out of fear of the inhabitants. His beloved wife dies in childbirth. and he's left bereaved. His firstborn son sleeps with another of his wives, and his sons develop into men full of wickedness, jealousy, and hatred, who don't care for their father at all. And the one son who does seem to have some genuine affection for his father loses him. He thinks he's been torn to pieces by wild animals. And then, as an old man, he faces famine and starvation and the potential loss of two more sons, including his youngest son, his now favourite son. That's Jacob's life. And now when you look back and think about it, you can see why his Jacob describes his days as evil. He looks back over his life and there's been so much pain and difficulty and suffering and being forced to move from one place to another. And when he compares the length of his life to his father and grandfather, who lived to 180 and 175 years old, his life has been a lot shorter than theirs. That's been Jacob's life. His years have been few and evil. Now that raises some questions, doesn't it? This man is God's chosen man in his generation, the one who's inherited all of God's promises. So why has Jacob had to go through all this suffering and pain and anguish? Has it been a mistake? Has it been a waste? Have God's promises, have God's purposes gone awry? Have they been delayed? Can God's promises be trusted? You look at Jacob's life and you ask those kind of questions. But it's not just for Jacob that we ask those kind of questions, is it? Many of you here have gone through your own pains and griefs and problems, whether it's in your families, whether it's been with your health, whether it's been in your work. Maybe you've known bereavements. Maybe you've been disappointed with your children. Maybe you've been let down by other people. Maybe you've been treated badly by other people. You know, so much of our experience in this world is like that. It's full of pain and suffering and problems and difficulties. So just like Jacob, we say, does that mean our lives? There's something wrong with them. That our lives have been a waste. Can God be trusted? Has something gone wrong? And the simple answer is no. Nothing's gone wrong. Despite all the pains, despite all the griefs, the fact is that God really has been in control of Jacob's life. And of your life, and of my life. But the Bible helps us because it's a real book, it's a realistic book. Because we read it and we find people like Jacob. We find people whose lives aren't simple, aren't pain-free, aren't difficulty-free. It's about people with real griefs and real heartaches and real problems. If you look back and your life seems to have been painful or fruitless or hard, well, that's how Jacob felt. If you look back and say, well, that feels like a description of my life. The years of my life have been few and evil. Well, here's a man who knows how you feel. The fact is, there's nothing abnormal, there's nothing wrong if that's how you feel. That's how Jacob felt. And that means God has put him here in his book to show us that he understands. He knows what life is like for us. He wants us to know that you're not alone if that's how you feel. You're not going through something abnormal or strange or wrong. This is what life so often is for believers, for Christians, as well as for people who have no love or understanding for God. In fact, sometimes non-Christians seem to have much better, more comfortable lives. But we're being told here that God knows what it's like. He understands us. He sympathizes for us. He's a man who can help us he can help us and comfort us. And he's pointing us to the experiences of other people, men like Jacob, to help us through our own experiences, our own problems. But that's not the whole picture. If Jacob tells us the truth about his feelings and his life, he says, "Yep, I feel as though my days have been few and evil." And yet he's not allowed to think that it's all been pointless, that it's all been for nothing, it's all been wasted. And he's not allowed to think that God's promises have failed. God has planned every detail of Jacob's life. Everything that's happened to him has been working together to bring about God's purposes. Everything that's happened to Jacob and his family is going to be used to bring about God's plans. And the section that we've read tonight shows us that in so many ways. You know, we've already seen God's promises being rescued from disaster. We've seen the change in Jacob's sons. We've seen the delivery from starvation. Now, we start to see how the promise is going to be worked out in this next generation. We're starting to see God's plan working out in other ways. We're seeing the promise re-established and recovered. We're looking at how God is working in this generation, in the generations of Jacob. So let's look at that. We're going to look at it under four sections, seeing the way that despite the few and evil years of Jacob's life, how we can see God so clearly now working out his promise in Jacob's life. The first scene, the first phase, is at the beginning of chapter 46. And I've said this is Jacob and the God of Isaac. What's happened? Remember, the brothers have come home to their father, to Jacob, with this news about Joseph. And they've come with all these wagons and these donkey loads of provisions. And we're told that initially Jacob can't believe it. He's just numb. It's not surprising, is it? It's such a surprising piece of news. And no doubt as well that that news comes with a slightly bitter side, because the brothers will have had to tell their father how it was that Joseph ended up in Egypt in the first place. Jacob is overwhelmed. It's all too much for him. And yet the evidence before his eyes, the donkeys and the wagons, is so strong that he can't deny it. And we're told that his spirit is revived. And he gets ready to set out to Egypt. They load the wagons, they gather their possessions, they gather their livestock, and they set off on the journey south down towards Egypt. And yet there is a niggle in Jacob's mind. There's a reason why he's fearful to make this journey. Yet in so many ways, this journey seems like the obvious thing to do, isn't it? Surely, looking at the situation, this is God's providence that's brought Joseph to power in Egypt in order to save the family. Surely it's God who sent his sons back with this good news, which has made Pharaoh so favourably disposed towards them, that he's even sent these wagons back so it's possible for them to travel. Surely this is God's clear overruling guidance, isn't it? And yet in the back of his mind, Jacob remembers something that happened to his father Isaac many years before. It was a very similar situation. There was a famine in the land of Canaan. And this is what it... And God speaks to Isaac, to Jacob's father. This is Genesis chapter 26, verse 2. It says, "The Lord appeared to him," that's to Isaac, "and said, 'Do not go down to the land of Egypt. Dwell in the land of which I shall tell you.'" And then God restates the great promise first made to Abraham, to Isaac. So Isaac, Jacob's father, was flatly forbidden to leave Canaan to go to Egypt. And if you can remember back even further, you might remember that his granddad, Jacob's granddad Abraham, also went to Egypt during a famine. And that nearly led to disaster as well. So Jacob has this question. Does that command that God gave to my father Isaac apply to me? Is this seeming clear providence from God a test? Should I say, no, I won't go? Would be going to Egypt be actually disobeying God? You know, so often people assume that clear coincidences, clear providences in their lives must be God's leading, God's guiding. They say, God brought this about, and that shows that I ought to do this. I ought to do that. But Jacob wants to know that he is doing the right thing. He's not satisfied just with that providence. On his journey, he stops at the edge of the promised land, at the edge of Canaan, in a place called Beersheba. It's right on the south of the country before you go into the desert, setting out to Egypt. Why does he go there? Well, he goes there because it's a special place. It's a place where his father Isaac, and before that his grandfather Abraham, built altars and worshipped God. And God spoke to both Isaac and Abraham in that place. So Jacob wants to do the same thing as his father. He goes to Beersheba and he makes sacrifices to the God, we're told, of his father Isaac. You can see he's thinking about his father's experience. He's thinking about that command given to his father. He wants God to speak to him. He wants to know if that rule still applies. And God does speak to Jacob. He does speak to him. He says, "Jacob, Jacob." He speaks to him in visions of the night. And he says, "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt. This is God's plan." And not only that, he makes the promise again. He says, "You will become a great nation when you go down into Egypt, and I will bring you back." Do you see, he's saying, this is my plan. You're right to wonder whether you should leave Canaan, but this is my plan, and I'm going to bring you and your family back to Canaan. And I'm going to be with you wherever you go, just as God had promised to be with him when he went to Laban. God is going to be with Jacob and his family. So we should never assume that a providence is definite proof of God's leading. It might be the way that God is using us, leading us. But above all, we need God's revelation. Not in night visions. God doesn't speak to us in night visions. But he speaks to us in the principles and commands of his word. And if some providence has come into our life and the Bible contradicts it, then however remarkable that providence might seem, we must follow God's word. So God speaks to Jacob. That promise, that wonderful promise made to his fathers before him, he makes again. It's restated. He is to go down to Egypt. And then the second thing we see is that Israel, Jacob's family, starts to become a great nation. And we're told that they all go down to Egypt. In fact, so keen is the writer for us to know that all Jacob's descendants went down to Egypt that he gives us a list of everybody who goes by name. Or at least the names of all the males who went anyway. Why do we get this long list? Maybe you got a little bit bored when I was reading it out, because it's quite difficult, isn't it, to just listen to a long list of names. Why is it so important for us to have the names of every one of Jacob's grandsons, and in some cases great-grandsons, and there's a couple of daughters in there as well, written down for us? Why do we need to know that? Well, remember the promise that's been made to Abraham and to Isaac, and now has just been remade to Jacob again. God has said to him, I will make you into a great nation. Well, all these names are being written down to show that God's promise is being fulfilled. You know, we're told a number here, aren't we? We're told that all the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. Well, that number is not an accident. It's not just a symbolic number. We do have symbolic numbers in the Bible, which the number itself isn't important. It is a number of real people. You can count up all these descendants. You can work out who's meant to be in the list and who's not. So it is a real number of people added together. But if you look carefully at the list, you'll realize that not everybody in the list has been born at this point. Some of them are grandsons or sons of Benjamin who can't have been born. So the author has given us a list, names, of people he wants us to know all were in Egypt, were all descended from Jacob, who add up to this number. And the point he's making is that the whole family has come down, all of his descendants. And that's stressed, verse 26, all the persons belonging to Jacob came into Egypt. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. He wants to show that all of Jacob's family have come. 70 is a special number in the Bible. It's the number 7 is a complete number. It's God's number. And 10's a special number. And 70 is 10 times 7, if you're good at maths. And that number 70 is then used as a special number for Israel later in the Bible. It's the number of the whole nation. But what God is saying is that promise is coming true already. Do you remember when Jacob set out on his own to his uncle Laban? There was one of him. And now, a few decades later, he and his whole family head down to Egypt, and there are 70 of them already. God has already transformed him from a single man to a whole nation in such a short time. Can you see the promise is coming true? It's already coming true. It's going to become true on a much greater scale while they're in Egypt. But the point of that number, the point of these names, is to show that God is already bringing about his promise. So Israel, Jacob, is becoming a great nation. Third point is this. We see Pharaoh, the king of Israel, blessing Israel. Let me remind you of another part of God's great promise. God promises this: I will bless those who bless you. You find that in Genesis chapter 12, verse 2, and in other places too. I will bless those who bless you. Well, that's a wonderful news for people who don't belong to Israel, that they're going to have a blessing. But it supposes something, doesn't it? It supposes that there are going to be people, there are going to be nations who will bless Israel, who will help Jacob and his family. And that's exactly what we see coming true here in these verses. It's Pharaoh, isn't it, who speaks to Jacob and says, to Joseph, and says, bring your family up to Egypt. Give them the best of the land. Take wagons so that you can bring your family easily. Don't worry about your possessions. We'll give you all you want. It's Pharaoh who gives them this property in the land of Goshen, which is ideal grazing land for their flocks and herds. It's Pharaoh who wants them to be rescued from famine, who wants them to enjoy the fat of the land. Do you see? This man, the king of Egypt, is blessing Jacob. And they're also being blessed through him by God in ways they don't even realize yet. They have all this material, don't we, about the fact they're shepherds and about the fact that they live in this land of Goshen. And there's Joseph talks to them about it and they talk to Pharaoh about it. And there's a real stress being put on it. Why is that so important? Well, it does look as though that land, although it's rich pasture land, was away from other Egyptian centres of population. And I presume that's because the Egyptians, we're told, and thought of shepherds as an abomination. I think ordinary Egyptians didn't want to live near shepherds. So they were happy to have their livestock in this rich pasture land, but they don't really want to live there themselves. So when Joseph and when Joseph's brothers turned up and say, we're shepherds, it's very easy, it's very convenient to send them to live in Goshen. But that means they're going to be away from the general population. And that's important, because that means that Israel is going to develop as a separate community. They're going to grow up and they're going to marry amongst themselves. And they're going to have their own culture and their own worship. And they're not going to be integrated with the Egyptian culture. They're not going to start worshipping the Egyptian gods. God has provided them this place within Egypt and yet separate from Egypt. They have a safe, separate place to grow into a great nation. That's why 400 years later, the Egyptians are so scared of them. because they're not an integrated people, they're a separate people within nation, within their nation. It's a great blessing. It's a great way that God keeps them safe. It's a great way that God fulfills his promise of making them a great nation. So Jacob and his family are blessed through Pharaoh. But then the final thing is this, that Jacob blesses Pharaoh. Do you remember how the promise goes? You will be a blessing. In you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. I will bless those who bless you. It's an extraordinary scene when you think about it, isn't it? Jacob, this old man, is brought into the palace to meet the great king, the Pharaoh, the ruler of the nations, the one who's shown great generosity to his family. And what happens? Does Jacob bow down low to the great king? No. The old man blesses Pharaoh. Jacob calls down God's blessing on this king. Who's the most important person here? In Hebrews we're told the greater blesses the lesser. And make no mistake, this blessing that Jacob calls down on Pharaoh is a real blessing. You know, Egypt is going to be saved from destruction and starvation through God's blessing. For the next few hundred years, they are going to be blessed by having Israel among them. Blessed because of Jacob. Blessed because Jacob has called down God's blessing on them. It's only when they forget Joseph and begin to abuse and curse Israel that things will start going wrong for Egypt. So can you see? The promise is coming true. Jacob is calling down God's blessing on Egypt, on Pharaoh. However difficult, however painful those years have been, however bad Jacob's experiences have been, however much Jacob still feels that his life has been very difficult and painful, we see that God is still bringing about his promises. He is still at work in Jacob and his family. The promises are coming true. And they're being extended into the next generation and the generations to come. Yes, Jacob's life has been very painful, very difficult. And yet God is working. And if you're a believer in the Lord Jesus Christ here tonight, remember that you have inherited the same promises. You're part of that great nation that's bringing blessing to all the families of the earth. God is working out his promises in this generation, in our generation. God is working out his promises and his plans through you and your life. And your life at times might be horribly painful, it might be difficult, just as Jacob's was. He certainly doesn't promise that it won't be. And yet, God is working through us in our lives, through our difficulties, our problems. So we need to take these chapters, and they should encourage us. They should encourage us to keep going, to keep trusting, to keep obeying, to keep loving, however difficult our lives are. And therefore, to become a blessing to the world around us.